You're listening to His Time. It is Friday, September 4th. That means it is Creation Club Day. Good morning, Pastor Wirth.
Good morning, Andy.
Happy Friday. God's blessings. What do we have today in Creation Club?
Well, today I thought I would weave together some themes from several different articles I'd been reading about creation, adaptation, natural selection, poodles, and yaks. So let's begin at the beginning with creation. You know, when we read God's Word, in the book of Genesis, it tells us that God made all things in 6 days by the power of His almighty Word. And then when God created living things, we see in each of the 6 days of creation, or each of the days of creation where there are living things created, He particularly says that He makes everything to reproduce after its own kind. And so, you know, you would say, don't we still see that? Dogs have puppies, cats have kittens. That's still how the world works. But then someone might say, but things adapt to their environment. Isn't that proof of evolution? Well, there's a wonderful article, a short article, actually, that's very accessible. If you go to answersingenesis.org, and there's an article, if you just look under adaptation, and it says, if living things such as plants have been observed to adapt to their environment, isn't that evolution? To see why it is not, imagine a population of plants in a reasonably well-watered environment. Now, the climate slowly changes so as to become progressively more dry. After several generations, it is noticed that these particular plants tend to develop deeper roots. This helps them reach water at deeper levels. Also, they have a more waxy cuticle, that is, the outer coating, than before, which prevents them from losing as much moisture. Both of these are adaptations. The plants are now better adapted to survive in their new environment. But this could only have happened because the genetic information allowing for waxier cuticles and deeper root systems was already in the population. Evolution, as an explanation of the whole world of living things, would require that information appears where it was not before. So an amoeba does not have the information required to construct a man. So amoeba-to-man evolution requires that new, more complex information be added. Therefore, examples of adaptation such as these plants most definitely do not demonstrate how alleged amoeba-to-man evolution could have occurred. Likewise, when we come to the matter of natural selection does not add any information at all. All it does is it selects for information that's already in the gene pool, and just depends upon the conditions that will favor one type of organism to survive over another. So people who believe in the Bible, people who believe in creation, do not deny that there is such a thing as natural selection. They just deny that it is proof of evolution. It doesn't add any information. So natural selection is simply preferring one kind of information that's already in the gene pool over another. So in this example that we gave before, in drier conditions, those plants that can have deeper roots and that can have the waxy coating, which is already in the gene pool of that particular organism, are the ones that are going to survive better in a dry environment than another. And we also need to note that what is happening there is a downhill change, because what happens is those particular plants are losing information that the other plants that were surviving quite nicely when there was more moisture had in their genes. And so by this happening where you have a dry condition and now only the plants that are able to survive in the dry condition survive and the other ones die out, then you've lost the genetic information that was in the gene pool before when both those with deeper roots and shallower roots were both able to survive in the same area. And so natural selection isn't evolution, and adaptation is also not evolution. It's just an evidence of the fact that God created within the various created kinds all kinds of genetic information so that they could adapt to various kinds of environments. This leads us to another interesting article written by Ken Ham some years ago. It's called, Did God Create Poodles? And he and his family have a dog, or at that time at least had a dog, that looks kind of like a poodle. It's not actually a poodle. It's a Bichon Frise. Is that how you pronounce that? It's the French name for that kind of dog. Looks kind of like a poodle to me. And he refers to his dog as a degenerate mutant. And his point is this, that, you know, when God created dogs in the beginning, the dog kind had all the genetic information for all the various kinds of dogs that we have today, from wolves to coyotes, foxes, and all the various domestic breeds of dogs that we have today. All the different dog kind were already, the information for all the dog kinds were already in the one kind, the dog kind. So the various breeds and varieties of dogs that we have today, you know, came from that original dog kind. Likewise, I guess you can go back to Noah's Ark, too, can't you? Because all, air-breathing animals were wiped out in the flood of Noah's Ark, except the ones that were preserved by God with Noah on the ark. And so it was two of every kind.
Mm-hmm.
And so two of the dog kind survived the great flood. And then from that mating pair, all the different kinds of dogs that we have today would have descended. And what Ken Ham in his article about Did God Create Poodles points out is that as we get purebred dogs today, how did that happen? Well, that's not even natural selection. That's artificial selection. So that when we had domestic dogs and people began breeding them, they would control which dog mates with which other, because they would like this particular trait and not this particular trait. And by controlling the breeding process, you're able to get dogs that, like poodles and Great Danes, which are appealing to us, but they're not very much like the natural original gene pool where you're the Heinz 57 mutt with all kinds of different characteristics. And by having the same kinds mate over and over again, what you wind up doing is having accumulations of mutations, and most mutations are not good things. You might have a mutation that you like, this particular snout on this dog or this particular ear on this kind of dog, but what happens is purebreds tend to have a lot of diseases. They have you accumulate a lot of copying mistakes in the genetic pool that have happened because of the fall into sin. You know, all creation is now under the curse, and mutations happen, and you have what's called a genetic load, the collection of these gene copying mistakes in all kinds of living things, but especially in things like purebred animals, and they are highly susceptible to all kinds of diseases. And so in order for these animals to survive, they wouldn't survive very well in the wild. They survive only because people like them, and they feed them special diets, and they take them to the veterinarian and have expensive surgeries and give them expensive medicine and so forth to compensate for all these genetic mutations that are accumulated by pure breeding. And as he points out, you know, presumably you could start with wolves today, and by breeding over time, could probably come up with a dog after several generations that would look pretty much like the poodle, because wolves would seem to be closer to the original kinds of dogs and have more of the genetic information for other kinds of dogs in them. But you couldn't start with a poodle and work backwards to try to breed and come up with a wolf, because you've lost all kinds of information along the way through the selective breeding process. So again, his point is that what you see in poodles is an example of what happens with selective breeding, and you're losing information, not gaining information. It's not an example of evolution, because they're all still the dog kind, and all things within the dog kind can still breed with one another and have viable offspring. Another example of this is the yak. In a recent Answers magazine, Answers issue volume 10, number 2, it's the one with Mount St. Helens on the cover, there's an article in there about yaks living the high life. And it's a really interesting article, because yaks are a kind of cow, you might say. They're cattle, but they have a number of special adaptations for living at very high altitudes, such as in the Himalayas. So you have these creatures living in a home range that's from about 13,000 feet to over 19,000 feet above sea level. What do you have in that kind of environment? Well, it gets extremely cold. At night, the temperatures drop down to 40 degrees below zero.
Wow. Wow.
There's extremely low oxygen. Oxygen levels are 40% lower than at sea level. You have very difficult terrain when it's very rocky and very steep. You have limited food because not very many plants grow up above the timber line there. And so there's not a lot to live on. And also you're getting a lot more solar radiation because you don't have as much of the atmosphere to protect you from the harmful radiation. Well, when you study yaks, you realize that though they are part of the bovine kind and can still breed with European domestic cattle and American bison and produce offspring, yet these particular creatures of God demonstrate, again, genetic information that was in the gene pool, but that's been selected as they have lived in these high environments so that they have a compact body with a short neck, short legs. They have a very thick coat of coarse outer hair. They have insulating undercoat of fine down. They have a layer of fat under the skin. Their sweat glands are turned off except at the muzzle so they can endure this extreme cold quite nicely. Likewise, the low oxygen, you know, they have been adapted with the genetic information that was already in the gene pool of the bovine kind. They have a larger chest, larger lungs, a larger heart to deal with the low oxygen. They have specialized hemoglobin to grab more oxygen, and they have a higher breathing rate. All of these things are things, ways that they've been adapted by God within the genetic material that was already in the original cow kind so that they can live at this high altitude. Their hooves are broad, and with their short, strong legs and their broader hooves, they're able to navigate on the steep mountainsides. Likewise, with the limited food, they have a special way of being able to process the food that they can gather at that high altitude, and again, living off the land there in a way that a less highly adapted cow would have difficulty doing that. Likewise, with the solar radiation, they have dark pigments in their skin and predominantly black hair that protect them against the sun's radiation at that high altitude. And you might say, well, if that's true of cows and dogs, you know, can it even be true of people? And as a matter of fact, it is. There are people that live in high altitudes, in climates that are very unlike where you and I are living, and they also, their bodies over a period of generations, have adapted. They're still human beings. You know, the cows did not evolve to be something that's not a cow. The dogs did not evolve to be something that was not a dog. Everything is still reproducing after its own kind. Nothing can become a different kind of animal, but you can adapt to be better suited to a particular environment. So people who live in Tibet, you know, also they also have special characteristics in their hemoglobin. They have a special mutation in the Tibetan DNA that changes how their bodies control the super athlete gene. This gene produces a protein that senses oxygen levels and adjusts other systems in the body to compensate when levels fall too low. They have a different breathing rate than people that live at lower levels and so forth. So like if you wanted to go climbing the Himalayas, you wanted to climb Mount Everest, you know, it takes time for your body to adjust to living at such high altitudes and to exercise at that high altitude. Whereas the people who live in Tibet have already had the opportunity to acclimate. And so there, when you have a Tibetan mountain climbing guide, he's going to be able to climb that mountain with more ease than you or I, because we're living closer to sea level and our bodies would need time to adjust to that new climate. So what does this all have to do with creation and versus evolution? Well, again, what we're saying is adaptation and natural selection do not point to evolution. It's certainly not molecules to man evolution. What they show is that God has designed every living thing in a wonderful way, and there's enough information that God has put in every created kind to adapt to all kinds of different environments. So we have cattle that live in the Sahara. You have cattle that live up in the Himalayas. You have cattle that do very well here in the Midwest. All of that because of God's wonderful design, and you can still enjoy your poodle even if it is a mutant mutt.
Exactly. Poodles I get, yaks I get. I don't understand why mosquitoes survived the flood. Thanks for Creation Club today, Pastor Wirth.
My pleasure. God bless you.
God bless you, too. Coming up in just a little bit, Morning Prayer. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO.